right, that's enough. Good evening, everybody. Hi, welcome to the Molloy Show. Thanks for tuning in. We are video streaming tonight, so if you'd like to hang out here in the dark little studio of the Molloy Broadcasting Company, just go to MikeMolloy.com and, first of all, buy a podcast subscription. And then secondly, just click on, what is it called, Molloy Vision? And you're in. All right, I got an email from Elaine early today. What's the date today, Kathy? Is this the 14th or 15th? I don't even know. Today's the 14th. I got this from her this morning. Apparently, the guy whose essays, two of which I have read on this program regarding the reality of that gusher in the Gulf of Mexico, apparently he is a Christian rapture freak, and also a birther. Now, I tell you this because I'm compelled to tell you this. I've been quoting him as though he were just simply a software engineer, i.e. a scientist. If you go to his website, PESN, it stands for Pure Energy Systems News. But if you go to PESN.com, there's some very interesting stuff on that website that has nothing to do with psycho-Christianity and also nothing to do with psycho-Obama birther politics. But according to Elaine, she was listening to an online interview with the guy the other night, and she writes, "I hope you listened to the show he was on." Well, I was on at the same time, Elaine, so I couldn't. He was discredited on the air. Some guy called in and challenged him on his numbers of how deep the pipe was, width, and so on. Noel couldn't answer his questions or tell him he was wrong. Instead, he said he had to go, that he was getting tired. Now, the last 10 minutes, the co-author of those articles talking about Revelation, the book of Revelation, Obama being the Antichrist, New World Order crap, that Obama had been a planned leader all his life, etc. I hope you guys read this. We'll post this on Facebook. Elaine. So, I don't know. I get very pissed off. I really do. I'm so sick of the birthers and the Christers and the rapture freaks. And, you're chunking along. You're trying to get information and you get something that, I'm not discrediting what he had on, that I quoted to you, all the stuff about the flow coming out of that hole in the earth. I'm not saying any of that was invalid. I'm just saying this, you need to know this because if you're like me, this puts into question everything that the guy has out there, on the internet, two lengthy articles of which we quoted or read the whole damn thing. Interestingly though, this morning's New York Times on the front page above the fold had an article about, BP's lies about the actual flow from that, and how the government and media have accepted the 5,000 gallons or barrels or whatever a day figure, and actually it's 10 times that, 20 times that, 100 times that. So in that respect, I think this guy Paul Noel is probably correct. But just so you know, so you can make your own decisions, he is a Christer, a birther, a rapture freak. And I wondered when I read that thing last night, he had a reference to Revelation, the book of Revelation in there, where he said this eruption, coming out of the floor of the, Gulf of Mexico, is similar to what you find in Revelation chapter whatever, verse whatever. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Revelation was a political piece written by John of Patmos, who was Turkish. I believe he was Turkish. And a lot of speculation that John liked to eat magic mushrooms and then report what he was seeing under the influence. So, there you go. Take it with however many grains of salt or carloads of salt you want. I still think his observations or his predictions about what's going on in the bottom of the Gulf are probably correct. Len in New York, who you've heard many times in this program, he says, "Mike, I had a revelation yesterday, I think. the disaster did not occur from the drilling, but from the attempt to cap the well. That's right. The drill, baby drill urgency farce was right here in plain sight. If the oil were just harvested, the break would not have happened. But apparently the bastards were saving the oil for a later date when they could gouge us all more. We need immediate legislation that any wells in process or which may be drilled in the future may not be capped until depleted, thus posing no threat or minimal threat, and that any dry hole or depleted well must be capped to certain specifications. Please, everyone, get this message out before a second disaster hits, since they will never shut down drilling. Lennon, New York. That last point is true. I don't think there's any power in the United States, in the corporate world, in the capitalist world, that could ever force these bastards to stop drilling in the bottom of the ocean. That's going to go on until they finally hit the wrong vein and the planet blazes to death, if we're not doing that already. But, you know, Len's right. It did not occur because of the drilling. It occurred when they attempted to cap it. You know, one of the things that is particularly, if not singularly, sickening to me about conservatives and Republicans is they do all kinds of bad things. They commit all kinds of crimes. Republican office holders, rank-and-file Republicans just commit a crime by not thinking. But I'm talking about Republican or conservative office holders. And then when you catch them, or when the government catches them, you immediately hear screaming coming from the Republican side of the aisle. Don't be blaming. Oh, you're going to play the blame game? Oh, no finger-pointing. Oh, see, you're just finger-pointing. Don't play the blame game. We got to move forward, not look backward. Come on, let's go. Which is similar to what Obama normally says, right, about looking forward, not looking backward. Of course, in looking backward, that's where you find who the culprits were, who got us in the mess that we're in here in the present. You have to look backward sometime. But don't you always hear these bastards screaming that, oh, you're going to play the blame game. Oh, finger pointing. It is so childish. It sounds like something you hear in a Sunday school classroom for fourth graders. But that is the average mentality and a developmental level of your typical Republican office holder, a fourth grade Sunday school attendee. Well, now Obama came out today. He had very harsh words for these swine bastards in the oil industry. He talked about what he called the ridiculous spectacle of oil industry finger-pointing over the Gulf of Mexico rig disaster. He also denounced, I like this, he denounced the cozy relationship, his words, that he said it existed for years between oil companies and federal regulators. The critics say led to the lax enforcement of safety regulations. Obama said new legislation would be introduced to ensure that BP pays for the damage and not U.S. taxpayers. I don't know. Is he going to make certain? Is Obama going to prevail upon his allies in the U.S. House or the Senate, wherever it's necessary, to get legislation passed where this cozy relationship, as the president calls it, is ended? You know, it's been particularly egregious for the past 8 years during the reign of George Bush and Dick Cheney. But we have a troll. Well, we have several trolls in the Obama administration. But the one that is really freaky to me is Ken Salazar, who is his Secretary of Energy, right? Ken Salazar. So when we come back from this break, his Interior Secretary. When we come back from this break, I want to tell you a little bit about Ken Salazar, who is one of three or four, so the article I read says, one of three or four members of the Obama administration of in positions of power of Hispanic heritage background, whatever that means. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Standing up to the flying monkey right. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. We have two things tonight on the program. First of all, bottom of next hour will be podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to our commercial-free podcast downloads. And also, a little bit later in the program, I want to share with you a follow-up from Bob Alexander regarding the electronic cigarettes, the e-cigs we talked about a couple of weeks ago back in April, and what has happened since we talked about that on the air. Now back to this thing about Ken Salazar. The Center for Biological Diversity has announced plans to sue him, the Interior Secretary, for ignoring. Now, this is not in the Bush administration. This is the Obama administration. Ken Salazar will be sued for ignoring marine mammal protection laws when approving offshore drilling operations. In other words, Ken Salazar violated the law. Since Salazar took office, the Department of the Interior has approved 3 lease sales, more than 100 seismic surveys, and more than 300 drilling operations without permits required by the Marine Mammal Protection Act and the Endangered Species Act. Now, this is Obama's Interior Secretary, who sounds like he got his training from Dick Cheney. It should be noted that several prominent environmentalist groups are very wary of this guy, noting his strong ties with the coal and mining industries. Now, he's the Interior Secretary, right? The executive director of the Center for Biological Diversity, which tracks endangered species and habitat issues, says Ken Salazar is a right-of-center Democrat who often favors industry and big agriculture. That would be corporate agriculture, in battles over global warming, fuel efficiency, and endangered species. In other words, Ken Salazar takes the position or the side of industry, of corporate America, over the real needs of the planet. Now, this is no surprise. I'm just saying. On May 9th, last year, 2009, Salazar announced the upholding of a Bush-era policy that prevents the regulation of greenhouse gas emissions via the Endangered Species Act, a policy he pledged to reevaluate when he took office in January. He said he was going to take another look at what the Bush crime family had perpetrated against the United States. So on May 9th, he announced, yeah, I've taken a look at it, and we're going to do the same thing George Bush did. Now, the policy states that despite the apparent negative impact global warming has on polar bears and endangered species, greenhouse gases cannot be regulated with the Endangered Species Act. Right? Salazar stated in a conference call announcing the decision that, quote, the single greatest threat to the polar bear is the melting of the Arctic Sea ice due to climate change. But the Endangered Species Act is not the appropriate tool for us to deal with what is a global issue. More weasel words. You know, instead of coming out and absolutely supporting the idea of trying to reduce the increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, because we're not going to stop it, Salazar comes up with some half-assed explanation that, well, we can't do anything through the EPA Act because, well, it's a global issue. It doesn't really, it's not the appropriate tool. Now, this decision by Salazar was met with criticism from environmental groups and praise from energy groups, including the American Petroleum Institute. Way to go, Ken, was their reaction. Some Democrats praised him and almost all the Republicans. Salazar contended in the same conference call that the Endangered Species Act was never intended to be used for the regulation of climate change. But he did sidestep questions of how the situation is different from that of the Clean Air Act, which is currently being used by the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate emissions. So the point is that Ken Salazar if you have any doubts about the corporate nature of the Obama administration, I know he talks a good story, really does, doesn't he? How long did it take him to get pissed off? 24 days. How long did it take Obama to get angry about what his interior secretary... Oh, and by the way, Ken Salazar was a big fan of Gail Norton, the former interior secretary under Bush and Cheney. And, of course, Gail Norton was, before she became head of the Department of Interior, she was a lobbyist for the lead industry. These are very small circles, aren't they? So, Barack Obama, environmental president? No. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Paradise is in your mind, you know that there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay the lag. You better thank God for that. There's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't have to pay the lag. You better thank God for that. There's hope. Every time I turn on the TV, there's hope. Somebody's acting crazy, there's hope. You let it, it'll drive you crazy, there's hope. But I'm taking back my power today, there's hope. Gas prices, they just keep on rising, there's hope. The government, they keep on lying. We gotta keep on surviving, keep living our truth and do the best we can.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Obama has decided to a certain degree, I guess not a very big degree, because he didn't want to step on the toes of the oil industry, I'm sure. But he's decided to try some hands-on stuff here concerning this disaster. And he has ordered the U.S. Energy Secretary, that would be Stephen Chu, to put together a panel of experts to get out there and figure out a way to stop this oil eruption into the Gulf. Chu is picking a team of scientists with reputations for creative problem solving. Chu said, I think it was yesterday, that five extraordinarily intelligent scientists from around the country will help BP and industry experts think of backup plans to cut off the oil that is gushing from this hole in the earth. Members of the Chu team are credited with accomplishments, according to Bloomberg.com, including designing the first hydrogen bomb. Jesus, how old is that guy? Inventing techniques for mining on Mars, and finding a way to precisely position biomedical needles. Okay. A managing director at one of the research firms said, quote, I don't think there's a lot of confidence in BP in Washington right now. So they're going to go with this team. Secretary Stephen Chu has asked his team to develop plan B, C, D, E, and F, in addition to finding a way to stop the leak, the gush. The Nobel Prize-winning physicist said after meeting with the scientists and BP in Houston on Wednesday, quote, things are looking up, and things are getting much more optimistic. Nobel Prize winning physicist is Stephen Chu. Is that right? Okay. The exact activities are cloaked in secrecy. However, a physics professor at Washington University in St. Louis, Jonathan Katz, said, quote, we saw some confidential and proprietary information. Oh, okay. Katz's early work focused on astrophysics, but now he consults on a wide variety of physics puzzles. He's a member of the JASON Group, a think tank dedicated to researching complex problems for the U.S. government, including the Defense Department. And according to Bloomberg, in a telephone interview from his home in Missouri, Katz skipped across topics, computer models for global warming, equality in college admissions, and the Mpemba effect, the observation that in specific circumstances, warmer water freezes faster than colder water. Katz wrote articles that he has labeled thought-provoking on his personal website, including Don't Become a Scientist, In Defense of Homophobia, and Why Terrorism is Important. That middle one, In Defense of Homophobia, you know, no matter where you go, just like the guy I've been quoting for a couple of nights, turns out to be a rapture freak, and which is not to say his science is wrong, but his mind is scrambled. A rapture freak and a birther freak. Well, Katz. It's rather lengthy from his website, his blog, and I'm not going to do the whole thing, but he quotes a lot of religion here, Katz does. He says homophobia is the moral judgment that homosexual behavior is wrong. Homophobia is not like ethnic, racial, or religious prejudice, which deny the intrinsic social moral rights and value of other people. Rather, it is a moral judgment upon acts engaged in by choice. Okay? Now, you can find this if you want to. Just do a search on In Defense of Homophobia, and you'll get it. This guy's out of his goddamn mind. He's really out of his mind. And he is another one of the geniuses that is going to work on stopping the hole in the floor of the ocean. He quotes an awful lot of biblical admonitions, both Old Testament and New Testament. But if you read his blog here, In Defense of Homophobia, you'll find a man who talks like a moron. I can't believe that every one of the people that seem to be in positions of power or who are asked to try to get involved in problem solving, some of these massive problems caused by capitalism run amok, that so many of these people are either homophobes, or closeted Nazis, rapture religious crazy people. It's just, Jesus, God, it just never stops, does it? It just never stops. What else we got here? I got a lot of emails from you regarding the spill and some of the things we've been talking about. And I don't want to call it a spill anymore. It's a gusher. Let's not call it a spill. Just an awful lot that I'd love to read on the air, but I just, you know, there's just not enough time. This is from Till. Mike, not to rain on the charade, but the disaster in the Gulf is only one of numerous possibilities for disaster. As you mentioned about the Cold War, there are still those missing nukes from a few years ago, and there is always a biotech disaster, the Andromeda strain of a weapon, or the worldwide failure of crops designed by Monsanto with no diversity. The possibilities are endless. Can't you just see the predator capitalists rubbing their infectious hands together saying, "Bet you never saw this one coming." Corporations are not people, they are aliens. Every other life form indigenous to this planet is either a eukaryote, everything except bacteria, or prokaryote, bacteria. They are all part of the carbon cycle, where the waste of one is nourishment for the other, and vice versa. And their parts are interchangeable. Plant, animal, and bacteria genes can be mixed and matched every which way. Corporations do not fit into the cycle. They certainly consume us and our environment, but their fruit is poisonous and is going to be the death of us all. Till. How come you've never told me those two words, Miss Biology Specialist? Huh? Eukaryote and prokaryote?
Eukaryotic and prokaryotic.
Well, you're using the adjective form. I'm using the noun form.
A eukaryote and a prokaryote.
Yeah. You've never, in the 14 years I've known you, you've never...
I guess we've just never discussed, you know, the...
Yeah, but you know all this stuff about bio. You've never told me about this.
Was I just supposed to say one morning as I'm making coffee, hi, honey, you want to talk about some eukaryotic or prokaryotic cells?
Well,
and,
I just...
And which of all
you
first?
Know, I get this email and I have to look...
Organelles and mitochondria. And
I get this email and I have to look up the words.
Oh, I'm sorry, honey. I really am.
Well, no,
I like looking up. All the time.
I like looking up about stuff I don't know about. But you're supposed to tell me all the biological stuff. That's your field, not mine. My field is trivial horse snot.
Trivial horse.
Political.
Political horse.
Yeah. Never mind. All right.
Well,
thanks.
Tomorrow we'll talk about culture mediums and agar agar and phyla.
Okay. All right. Don't be a show off. All right. I learned two new words today, thanks to. You know, I did. Eukaryote and prokaryote. I feel like the week has not been a waste. This is from Marie. The sadness of the oil spill wraps around me like a heavy cloak. And she's got the word spill in quotes. I have two great-grandchildren about the age of your Molly that I take care of a lot. So I share all of your concerns and also understand the need for denial of the awful truth. Talking about the denial the other night. My larger family, though educated and aware, are still mainly concerned with keeping a paycheck coming in and are purposely distracted by daily activities. They do not want to talk about it. I'm grateful to you for staying on track. Keep the truth and the facts coming, please. I am subscribing later today, Marie. Thank you, Marie! And regarding the use of nukes to stop this, Mushroom Prospector writes, nukes have been used, but they've been used to increase oil flow to a wellhead, at least once anyway in tests, fracturing the rocks surrounding the bore in hopes of aiding the flow, making it, you know, come faster. But at 3,000 degrees... oxygen leaves silicate rock and binds with the carbon preferentially. This reaction is exothermic. With the right proportion of rock and carbon, it becomes self-sustaining. The Athabasca tar sands in Alberta, Canada have this perfect mix. As illustrated in the movie Total Recall, the potential to become a real volcano exists. Not only does it exist, this is probably the source of most, if not all, volcanoes. Leading, of course, to a deeper question. Are these lighter elements all buried from what was once on the surface? Or is it material coming from reactions closer to the core of the Earth, byproducts left over from nuclear meldings? And how much is there in that case? An old science fiction story told of triggering that underlayer of reactive elements. I believe it was called The Thing of Terrible Beauty. From Mushroom Prospector. Between Till and Mushroom Prospector, I just feel like a total dumbass. Before the hour, sorry about that, True Seekers. Got so involved in what we were saying and didn't get out of the way for the commercials. What I was saying is, in so many instances, I get emails from people who are barely articulate, who can't spell, who don't realize there's a spell check button on their email system, whose ideas are just 8 degrees below butt-level consciousness one. And then I get emails from people who, and those are all right-wingers. Invariably, those are right-wingers. Conservatives, Republicans. And then I get emails from people that, emails that are extremely well-written. Somebody does run spell check, or these people do run spell check before they send it. If they have a problem with the program, they talk about it. They either write from their personal experience, like Marie did, or they talk about the scientific part, like Till did. Or my last emailer here, Mushroom, what's his name? Mushroom Prospector. I think it's a guy. And I found this to be true over all the years I've been in talk radio, back before there was email, when there were just phone messages, when people would leave messages on a radio station. I might be working at a radio station, and I would check my messages when I come in during the in the afternoon. And invariably, the messages that were from the right-wingers, from the Republicans, from the conservatives, were just gibberish. Mispronunciations, stupid comments, asinine points of view. And from the liberals or the progressives, they were, even if they were critical, they were always coherent. They made sense. The language was a correct language, proper language. People talked in paragraphs rather than guttural phrases the way your average right winger does. And it's just amazing to me. Dave from L.A., Mike, I've been making phone calls this morning to the president and members of Congress regarding the ongoing disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. I urge the president to mobilize all government resources to get the oil pouring into the Gulf stopped. I discussed my disgust and outrage the way this whole thing has been handled. I then called various members of Congress. And he goes on to say, some other comments about who he's called and so on and so forth. Finishes up. Anyway, I felt that I had to do something, so I started with making my voice heard. Regards, Dave, in L.A. You know, what a novel idea, making your voice heard. And then John in North Central Texas. We I read an email from him the other night. He says, Mike, I forgot to mention, if oil does hit the loop current, it sweeps around the southern tip of Florida into the Gulf Stream. What no one mentions is Cuba. Dramatic collapse of the Cuban economy, a nation of angry refugees with political complications in Miami. I wouldn't want to be in Florida this summer. Any bets they still got a rusty old nuke lying around somewhere? Maybe a huge rubber band gun? Goodbye, Miami. There's a lot of gas coming out with the oil. Due to temperature and pressure issues, the gas flashes to frozen crystalline form as it hits the water. It's snowing around the wellhead, 5,000 feet below the sea, like volcanic ash around St. Helens, except that the snow is explosive, which isn't a problem underwater exactly. The problem is that the methane is toxic as hell. Of course, the deepwater horizon burned when drifts of frozen hydrates flashed back to natural gas when exposed to the atmosphere. Tricky stuff. It can flash to gas unexpectedly. Makes the idea of another Katrina pretty spooky if that stuff starts washing in onshore. Exploding hurricanes. The imagination fails. Back to the Gulf Stream, the reason Iceland and Greenland are inhabitable. The New England and Canadian fisheries are under direct threat. No more Maine lobster. The North Sea and the Grand Banks. The Gulf is a third of our seafood. The East Coast supplies another third. Seafood chain restaurants, a thing of the past. Can our economy take tens of billions of losses each year for the foreseeable future? Armageddon, indeed. John, North Central Texas. He was the guy who has worked in the Texas oil patch for years and understands it probably a lot better than most of us. I'm going to get away from the Gulf oil story for the rest of the evening, simply because it's just become overwhelming, which is not to say that we're going to stay away from it beyond this evening. I'm sure there are going to be some developments over the weekend, and we'll definitely get back to it. But there's some other things that that I do want to drop into the mix tonight that I think are important. And some of it is just hysterical bat squeeze. You know, your typical Republican stuff that punctures the news every single day. Remember I told you about those the Republican convention in Maine, where they threw aside all even an attempt to remain the Republican Party. Their state platform now is the teabagger platform for Maine. Well, that was bad enough, but there's something else these convention freaks did when they got together, and I want to tell you about that. Also, an ad that is circulating over in Alabama about the regarding the governor's contest among Republicans. You're not going to believe this. And what else have we got? The Arizona situation now where ethnic studies are prohibited. I have an essay by Leonce Gator. You'll find it op-ed news. All ethnic studies, of course, have been banned except white ethnic studies, right? So we have, and this thing from Bob Alexander that I've got to share with you. So stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. From my friend Bob Alexander out in Seattle, and he had been smoking cigarettes for 44 years. He and I had talked before about the fact that I quit 8 years ago, and I quit with gum and patches, and it was the 87th time I had quit, and it was driving me insane, but I was finally able to do it. And I don't make a big deal about it because there's one thing I can't stand. It's listening to an ex-smoker or an ex-alcoholic or an ex-heroin addict or an ex-anybody who talks about, oh, my struggle. But, you know, now I'm smoke-free. I'm alcohol-free. You know, okay, fine. And I think it's great. But that's like listening to all the details about somebody's appendectomy. So I don't talk about it a lot. But Bob had told me that he'd really struggled with quitting, and he has a young son, and Bob is no spring chicken either. He's not quite as old as I am, but he's also not in his 30s. So he wrote me about this thing he tried, the e-cig, and he wrote me two essays, and I read them both on the air, and if you were listening back then, you know what I'm talking about. He called me the other day, and he said, I want to give you a follow-up. I said, okay, send it on. Here it is. Hey, Mike, after the two-part piece about e-cigarettes aired in April, over 100 of your listeners went to superbeans.com/quitting, clicked on a link, and ordered an e-cigarette starter kit from cigeasy.com or Vapor for Life. I asked those vendors for email addresses from orders generated through the Superbeans link, and when I thought that everybody had received their kits and had been using the e-cig for 3 or 4 days, I sent out a survey. I was curious to see how everyone was doing during the first few days of making the transition from smoking tobacco. I could have waited, but I thought the first 3 or 4 days are the most critical. Everybody stops smoking the day they slap on the patch or start gnawing the gum. I think the real test is to check in after a couple of days to see if people have gone nuts or not. Here's what I found from the return to surveys. 88% had smoked for over 20 years. 76% smoked a pack or more a day. 88% had tried quitting multiple times, and 72% had tried nicotine replacement therapies or drugs. And after using e-cig for a few days, 68% stopped smoking tobacco cigarettes completely. And the remaining 32% had cut their cigarette consumption way, way down. And no one reported any of the white-knuckle, wall-climbing, jumping-out-of-your-skin insanity that happens when you try to quit smoking. Here are some excerpts. 1. I just feel no need to smoke cigarettes now, and I don't think I'll ever go back. 2. I don't stink of smoke. My breathing is easier, and my self-esteem has acquired six-pack abs. 3. I have more energy. My return sense of smell and taste is exhilarating, and the shortness of breath and cough is gone. 4. The e-cigs were delivered Saturday afternoon. I opened the package and put them together, and I have not smoked a cigarette since. It's nothing short of miraculous. 5. After receiving the starter kit, I haven't had, wanted, or craved a cigarette since. I'm stunned. I keep thinking, it couldn't be this easy. To have 27 years of guilt, shame, and anxiety about my health just lifted away in a matter of seconds. Words cannot describe the huge relief I feel. Even better, I ordered a kit for my niece who suffers from asthma, and I can't wait to get her off the cigarettes. The next one. Just a little note of continued thanks. It's getting the e-cig starter kit for my dad. He hasn't picked up a cigarette and is no longer smoking 3 packs a day after more than 40 years of trying unsuccessfully to quit. Just like that, he quit. End of the excerpts. Bob continues, up to 500,000 smokers have switched from tobacco to e-cigarettes over the last 2 years. Dr. Joel Nitzkin, a doctor with a Master of Public Health, is the chair of the Tobacco Control Task Force, the American Association of Public Health Physicians. On April 2nd, 2010, he wrote, we favor a permissive approach to e-cigarettes because the possibility exists to save the lives of 4 million of the 8 million current adult American smokers who will otherwise die of a tobacco-related illness over the next 20 years, end quote. Dr. Murray Laugesen of Health New Zealand is one of the few researchers who have carried out an in-depth analysis of the contents of the e-cigarette. In a May 2009 interview, Dr. Laugesen said, quote, we would rate the Ruyen electronic cigarette 2 to 3 orders of magnitude safer. That's 100 to 1,000 times safer than a tobacco cigarette. So, the inevitable question is, why have health advocacy groups joined the FDA in trying to ban something that is 10 times more successful than the nicotine patch or nicotine gum in helping people quit smoking? I'll try to condense a 2-hour conversation with Bill Godshall, executive director of Smoke Free Pennsylvania, and 2 weeks of research to answer that. Anti-smoking groups have prevailed. Smoking was banned in the workplace, bars, and restaurants. Cigarette advertising aimed at young people was stopped, and cigarette taxes were raised on the state and federal level to defray smokers' health costs. Harm reduction was the goal, but tobacco prohibitionists slowly took control of the movement, and anti-smoking became anti-tobacco. The words were changed from smoking kills to tobacco kills. Even though smoke-free tobacco products are 99% less hazardous than cigarettes. By lying about smokeless tobacco, the prohibitionists have proved they were more concerned with stamping out all things tobacco than with people's health. The pharmaceutical industry only wants one story in front of the public. The only way to quit smoking is by using nicotine replacement products or drugs. The industry found willing mouthpieces to push that story in the anti-tobacco movement, and the extremists found a steady flow of cash. The FDA is also hooked on big pharma cash. For the first 86 years of the Food and Drug Administration's existence, all funding came through the U.S. Treasury. We paid our taxes, and the FDA received appropriations out of the budget. But in 1992, a law was passed that said for a large proportion of the work done by the FDA on new drug applications, the money's going to come directly from the industry. In 2009, the pharmaceutical industrial complex funded the FDA to an estimated $600 million. Because of this direct funding, The FDA looks upon the industry as their client instead of the public and the public health, which should be their clients. It's not a new story. Corporate cash manipulates extremist so-called grassroots movements while pressuring the government to do its bidding with even more cash. Wherever have we heard that tune before? But this time, we have hope that it's not going to play out like they want. Legislation was derailed in some states attempting an e-cigarette ban because e-cig users showed up and debunked the FDA's exaggerated claims and outright lies. This is one instance where letters and phone calls to elected representatives made a difference, and there are actions that you can do right now to help. The American Association of Public Health Physicians is trying to get the FDA to reclassify and regulate e-cigs as tobacco products, thus keeping them on the market, instead of banning the products by classifying them as drugs or devices. You can submit a comment urging supportive action by the FDA online. The bottom line here is if you've had a positive experience using e-cigarettes, tell somebody. Write a letter to your elected representative and to the editor of your local paper, but above all, tell your friends who smoke cigarettes. You can join the Consumer Advocates for Smoke-Free Alternatives Association and sign and mail in all available petitions. Links to everything can be found at superbeans.com/quitting. The main thing that gives me hope is this. E-cigs have become a political issue, but it has not devolved into a partisan issue. Reason can still prevail because people are still listening to one another. The news of the day completely overshadows the relatively insignificant fact that a couple of weeks ago, 100 people were able to get out from under their cigarette addiction. But it's those small sparks of progress that enable us to continue to deal with the news of the day. Regards, Bob.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. If you want to get more information or to follow up or to stay in touch with Bob or whatever about these e-cigarettes, you can go to superbeans.com/quitting and get all the information you could possibly want. If I were still smoking, I would have gone for this in half a heartbeat. It just so happens that after trying 87 times, I was able to quit 8 years ago. But check this out if you're a smoker. You really should stop. You know that. So this might be a way to do it. Reg over at TV News Lies writes, we were watching the PBS NewsHour of the Jim Lehrer tonight, wondering if we'd missed anything on TV News that was still slightly untainted. After all, we've supported PBS programming for a number of years, out of habit, I suppose, and a lifelong love of opera. What struck me tonight, since the topic for discussion was going to be the oil rig disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, was the list of corporate sponsors of the station that preceded the news coverage. My husband and I both laughed aloud at the list, which started out with Chevron, Bank of America, Monsanto, and Pacific Life. There were several others, but these were the first four, and while I knew there were corporate sponsors, this was a real slap to the head. So goes the myth of public broadcasting, and for the record, we had covered the important stories of the day without their help at her website. Yeah, Chevron, Bank of America, Monsanto, and Pacific Life. We're really F's. You know that, don't you? I mean, there is no way out of this. Capitalism, corporatism has got us by our respective short hairs. You know that, don't you? You know that. Maybe we ought to do what Jimmy Buffett suggested a long time ago. You know, just get... No, it wasn't Jimmy Buffett. Who was it said we should just get drunk? Who was that? Was that Jimmy Buffett? Alabama. Alabama it is the most bizarre place. I spent a night one time in Dothan, Alabama, and swore I would never go back. When we would go to the Gulf, and that's in past tense now, I guess, we sometimes would go down through Alabama to get to the Florida Panhandle. And even driving through Central and South Alabama just gives me the willies. I'm sorry. If you live there and you're a progressive, look, I know how you feel because I live in Georgia. But Alabama is the damnedest place. Now there's this primary season is on, and a bunch of Republicans are vying to get the Republican nomination to be governor. A mysterious ad that accuses one of these candidates for governor of supporting the theory of evolution and questioning the Bible has triggered a nasty shouting match in this Republican primary race. Now, understand that somebody has put out a video that says one of these candidates, his name is Bradley Byme, B-Y-M-E, Bradley Byme. The ad questions his Christian faith and accuses him of being a liberal, referencing Byme's time on the state school board where he was first elected as a Democrat in the 1990s before switching parties. The ad's narrator says in a quizzical voice, "On the school board, Byme supported teaching evolution? Said evolution best explains the origin of life? Even recently said the Bible is only partially true?" Another voice closes the ad by saying Byme is trying to look conservative. Yeah. Well, this ad has triggered a kind of an all-hands-on-deck response from the Byme campaign. Guess what he's doing? This is Alabama, and Mr. Byme has been accused of believing that the theory of evolution best explains the origin of life on Earth. That immediately makes him a tool of Satan, maybe the Antichrist himself. He's going to burn in hell. He wants to lead our children into the raptures of homosexuality. Worse than anything else, he is a liberal. He's trying to undermine God. He's peeing on the Bible. He's destroying the church. All of that because this guy says that evolution is probably the best way to explain the origins of life on Earth. Well, Mr. Byme has freaked out. And he has retaliated. He has not retaliated. He's responded. And I'll share the response with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard on my car. Through my trials and tribulations and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus I'll go far.
Well, Welcome back. 25 before the hour. All right, back to this. We're going to do podcast trivia as soon as I finish this particular little item. So if you want to call in for podcast trivia, 877-996-2556. So anyway, this guy named Bradley Beim, he's running to get the nomination to be the Republican candidate for governor of Alabama. He'll then, of course, go up against a Democrat. But somebody who is also running in that primary, and the suspicion is it is this guy, Tim James. He's the one that we told you about last week who said if he's elected governor, everything's going to be in English. Ain't going to have no bilingual. Ain't going to have none of that. Now, hell no, ain't going to have none of this driver's license exams and anything but English. Okay, whatever, freak. He's the son of former Alabama Governor Fob James. So anyway, Mr. James has not claimed responsibility for putting out this ad that lists one of his competitors for the Republican nomination as being, something terrible. He's a liberal. And the proof of his being a liberal, when he was on the school board, when he was on the state school board back in the 90s, before he switched parties, he's still a Democrat, he advocated the teaching of evolution. Evolution. He said that evolution best explains the origin of life. And he said that the Bible is only partially true. Oh no! So, the Beim campaign, you know, they know where they live. They don't live in Wisconsin. They don't live in California. They don't live, they don't even live in North Carolina. They live in Alabama. If you live in Alabama and somebody says, hey, says evolution is what happened to make everything be here, you're doomed. You got to answer quickly. So he decided to answer quickly. He issued a statement. In the statement, Mr. Beim said he believes, quote, every single word in the Bible, it's all true, and that to the contrary, he fought to get creationism taught in Alabama schools. Now, why is this important? Well, because this one of these freaks will probably wind up being governor of Alabama. James, the one who probably started this, put this ad out, the one who said that the driver's license test to be conducted only in English if he's elected. Now, he also says if he's elected that he would stand tall against the teachers union. Now, the reason he'll stand tall against the teachers union is because the teachers union has not advocated in favor of teaching creationism. The teachers union is comprised of, surprise, surprise, teachers! And they would like to teach, surprise, surprise, science! And you wonder why we're in the trouble that we're in. You wonder why this country is going right down the toilet. The corporations want us to be dumber than dog droppings, easily manipulable by crazy psychopathic bastards like Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage. The corporations want us to remain stupid and uneducated. Jesus is coming! Ain't no evolution! It was a talking snake! Among other things, they want us to do that so we're easily manipulable by fear, ignorance, stupidity, dumbassery. Unions, workers' rights, education? Nah. Unbelievable. On the Democratic side, Representative Arthur Davis is facing off against State Agriculture Commissioner Ron Sparks, but general election matchups have shown the Republican candidates ahead in November. In the polling that they've done in the state of Alabama, would you vote for the Democrat or for the Republican who won't teach that nasty religion, science stuff, and we'll teach religion, God's word. Who do you want to be elected? And the dumbasses in Alabama, Oh, my God. Want the Republican. How do we get that stupid? You know, I can remember times when that kind of stupidity was kept kind of quiet. And it never showed up in public on you know, for state office. Oh sure, it might have been talked about in you know, quietly in caucus meetings or among the voters or what have you. But when did it get to be a badge of accomplishment to say you're anti-science? That there's no such thing as a theory of evolution. That you can see God's hand in the complexity of, oh, take the human eye, for example. And what the morons don't understand, that if it is the complexity that fully demonstrates evolution. If God had wanted to create an eye, why not just punch a hole in the skull, put in an eyeball and let the light come in and the brain sees it, which is not the way it happens. No, God decided that what goes through the eye is going to be reversed and upside down. And why is that? Because God is a trickster. Tell me again why it's that way, Kathy. Why does the image come in upside down and backwards?
You want me to start with the prokaryotic and
No. Just do the eye thing. Go ahead, do the eye thing quickly. We got to do trivia.
Well, I can't do it quickly, but the point is just that the argument that if anybody should just go grab the book, The Blind Watchmaker, because Richard Dawkins makes the case so much more clearly than I ever could. But if the creationists who want to scream about intelligent design have it backwards. Is something that is more complex is not evidence of an intelligent designer. It's evidence of the opposite. If there were an intelligent designer, you wouldn't have to have an image of an eye, you know, or an organ like an eye that has to be that complicated.
And
you know,
why
God, would
why?
You say let there be
right.
vision? Because it evolved from photocells, photosynthetic cells. And it was never designed for vision per se. I mean, those cells that, you know, we all came from sort of a protist-based life form that was sort of neither plant nor animal originally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, photosynthetic cells are still, you know, found in the human body.
So the function of the early eye.
We don't create energy, convert energy from sunlight.
The function of the early eye was just to let light in.
Exactly. Because to find light, you know, light helped the organism find more food, frankly.
Right.
I mean, you were drawn to light because more food sources were in lighter, you know, areas where sunlight reached rather than in the shadows. So it was never, you know, there was no vision involved in the way we understand it in those early photocells. So by the time the eye evolved, to have an eye that would see an image that did not have to be converted, flipped over, your eye would have to be flat like a movie screen. And there's no way to get at a blood supply and nerves and whatnot without some kind of concavity for the eye to be housed.
So that explains the rods and cones and
all
optic
that came
nerves.
Much later. I
right.
mean, you know, we all know there's lots of, you know, mammals out there that are colorblind. But yes, you know, all that came later. Yeah, but you can just look at all, there's the bony flatfish. I mean, there's the giraffe that has the superficial vein in its neck that does nothing. That's just evidence of you know, where it would used to have served gills in a seaborne animal. So, there's just millions of examples.
Right.
Of evolutionary mistakes.
So that book, the Blind Watchmaker.
The Blind Watchmaker by Richard Dawkins will change your life. I mean, it is an unbelievably amazing treatise.
Well, maybe what we ought to do is get some copies of that book and send it over to the candidates for governor in Alabama and watch them go slowly insane. All right, you got the let's do some podcast trivia. We still have time. Yeah, here we go. All right. Once again, it's time for podcast trivia here on The Molloy Show, where you can win a one-year subscription to commercial-free downloads. Let's go to John in Denver, Colorado. John, you ready?
I'm ready to go.
All right. What was the name of the petroleum and energy company that was formed in 1977 to give George W. Bush some kind of legitimate profession? Was it A, Bush Oil, B, Arbusto Energy, C, Amarillo Energy, or D, AWOL Oil?
What year was it again?
Bush Oil, Arbusto Energy, Amarillo Energy, or AWOL Oil.
And you said it was in 77?
Yeah, formed to give George W. Bush some kind of legitimate profession.
Oh, God. I guess I'll have to go. I'll take two.
Which one?
Number two.
B, Arbusto Energy. That's it! All right, way to go! All right, John, you win. Let me put you on hold. Kathy will get the pertinent information for you, from you. And congratulations. You get a free one-year podcast subscription to Malloy Show Downloads, commercial-free. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 10 before the hour. Congratulations to who won that podcast? John in Colorado. All right, way to go, John. This is from Joni in Jesus Freak, South Carolina. Hi, Mike. I was driving through the Midlands of Jesus Land yesterday and spotted a sign outside a church that I wanted to share with you. I know you are all too familiar with this stuff, living up there in the mountains of Jesus Land, but this one speaks to the ultimate in how far these poor fools have gone and their religious insanity. And it's maddening for the rest of us who have to share the same air, what there is left of it, with them. Here goes. This is what the marquee outside the church said. Coming soon on a cloud, Jesus Christ. It has now come to a point in this country, Joni writes, when such blatant ignorance and tomfoolery can be put proudly on public display and nobody thinks twice about it. Just like in Hitler's Germany, when enough people wake up as to what these fascist hypocrites and fraudmeisters like Pat Robertson and Franklin Graham and John Hagee and the rest have done and are doing to us, in league with right-wing media monsters and scam artists, it will be too late. Having convinced millions of people to believe in their utterly useless and even dangerous nonsense, establishing their theocratic Jesus nation will be as easy as apple pie. Meet the new religio corporate America, a debased culture of anti-intellectualism, tribalism, and militant fundamentalist Christian fascism. This, and not some zombie, is what is coming soon. And the liberal left seems powerless and devoid of will to put a stop to it. Every new day brings a new revelation of fraud and hypocrisy on the part of these bastards, and it matters not a whit to those who are blinded by their lies. And that's what's so scary. Enjoy the last of the shrimp, Mike. I like mine with garlic and butter. Joni in Jesus Freak, South Carolina. Well, Joni, I stopped eating shrimp about 25 years ago because I love shrimp, especially garlic shrimp. I loved garlic shrimp. I went to my favorite Thai restaurant one night, took my son Chris, and we had garlic shrimp. And about an hour later, I had an incredible reaction. Came very close to going into anaphylactic shock. It was unbelievable. The whites in my eyes turned red. Everything swelled up. And the people were with me said, we got to take you to the emergency room. I said, no, it's okay. I'll walk it off. you know, being the old druggie that I am, any time you overdosed or did something wrong, you just walk it off. Too much acid, walk it off. Yes, but my, I don't know, I'm walking in vanilla pudding. Doesn't matter, walk it off. Too much reefer, too much mushroom, psilocybin, I'm forgetting everything. Whatever it was, too much of, walk it off. Chest pains, walk it off. Drunk on your ass, walk it off. So I tried to walk off the shrimp event and did. I mean, you know, when you've done every single hallucinogenic plant that's available in the southern United States over the course of your life, you can survive anything, I guess. But so I walked it off, but I told my doctor about it the next week or so later when I was there, and she said, well, what you need to do here, I'll write you a script. Go get an EpiPen. It's full of epinephrine.
Ooh, really?
And the next time you eat shrimp, as soon as you finish, jam this into your leg. I decided to not eat shrimp. So, Joni, I would love to enjoy the last of the shrimp, but I did that, you know, 25 years ago. Now, these insane Maine Republican conventioneers, we told you about them earlier this week. They held a caucus, I think we talked about this week. They had a state convention and replaced their standard Republican platform with a hilarious four-page teabagger email that one local reporter for the Portland Press Herald could only describe as, quote, a mix of right-wing fringe policies, liberation buzzwords, and outright conspiracy theories. It turns out, though, that this was only the second most comical thing that the teabaggers did during the convention. Some of these people, while caucusing in a rented classroom at the nearby middle school, got it in their heads that the classroom's teacher was a commie liberal, indoctrinating the little children with commie liberalism. So they just dug through all of his stuff and trashed the place. This is way as reported in the Portland Press Herald. Quote, we allow them to use the space, and I'm appalled that they would go through a teacher's things, let alone remove something from a classroom, said school committee member Sarah Thompson. We want the public to use school spaces, but they need to respect that it's a school and understand that they should leave it the way they find it, end quote. The Republican State Convention was held at the Portland Exposition Building, which is on Park Avenue near the middle school. Party members from Knox County caucused in a classroom used by 8th grade social studies teacher Paul Clifford. When Clifford returned to school on Monday, he found that a favorite poster about the U.S. labor movement had been taken and replaced with a bumper sticker that read, "Working people vote Republican." Later, the teacher, Paul Clifford, learned that his classroom had been searched. Republicans who had attended the convention called the principal, Mike McCarthy, to complain about anti-American things they saw there, including a closed box containing copies of the U.S. Constitution that were published by the ACLU. The state party leader, Christy Lee McNally, said, quote, over 900 people attended these caucuses without incident, and I hope that the actions of a few do not tarnish the image of many. Oh, they won't. The fact that they adopted a hilarious four-page teabagger conspiracy theory email as their official state platform, that's the part that tarnishes the image of all of them. Hey, welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Email here from Jack. Mike, as you talked about the folks in Maine, I was trying to come up with something clever to insult them with, but I remembered that I thought of a word not too long ago that begs for a definition. The word is teagasm. T-E-A-G-A-S-M, teagasm. There's just got to be something funny to be done with that word. That's a good one, teagasm. Thanks, Jack. And just one more little testimonial here before we go to your phone calls from Bruce in California. Mike, I ordered the e-cigarettes after listening to Bob's first two pieces, and the results have been nothing short of miraculous. I've been a heavy smoker for 47 years, as has my wife. I ordered two kits, and the e-cigarettes were delivered in the mail late Saturday, May 1st. I opened the package, and I swear that neither she nor I has smoked even one cigarette since they arrived. Even more astonishing, smokers know that they smoke more in places like bars and casinos, and it happened that very evening. We were headed for a local casino. 4 hours after they arrived, I was sitting... 4 hours after the e-cigs arrived, I was sitting at a blackjack table, e-cig in hand, and did not have even the slightest craving for a cigarette. My wife and I had each taken an unopened pack of cigarettes with us just in case, and we returned home with the cellophane wrappers intact and eventually gave the packs away. I thank Bob Alexander from the bottom of my heart for his decision to share his experiences, and I thank you for airing his essays. They've changed my life forever, and I've been telling anyone and everyone about the miracle called an e-cig. I'd like to add that another reason there's an effort to ban these is that this actually gets people to quit. And contrary to all the crap that's being fed, this government is just as addicted to tobacco taxes as we are to nicotine. It's costing them money, and they don't like that a bit. Thanks again for what you did, Mike. Between you and Bob, you've done something I never thought possible. I quit smoking without a whimper. Bruce in California. Well, I won't take any credit for it at all. Bob Alexander is the one who, I mean, it's nice of you to say, Bob, but Bob Alexander is the one who provided the testimonial. And you, my friend, are the one who went ahead and took the leap and bought them and got free. I'm not an evangelist about this. I'm not going to get all evangelical on your ass about cigarette smoking, about quitting. But if you still smoke and you're over the age of 50, okay. I mean, you're playing with a loaded revolver. If you still smoke and you're over the age of 20 or 30 or 40, you really are. There's no way to rationalize that. Addiction is addiction is addiction. And addiction makes you do funny things. It makes you tell yourself weird, weird lies and stories and rationalizations. But it's addiction. That's all it is. That's also, you don't smoke because it tastes good. You don't smoke for, you get shots of serotonin or whatever into your brain. But no. The reason you smoke is because you are addicted. I mean, we've had 200 years of propaganda about what cigarettes are all about. But anyway, like I said, I'm not going to get all evangelical on your ass, but man, woman, hey, yo, look, woo. Whatever. All right, to your phone calls. Matthew is in Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Matthew.
Been a while.
Yeah, where you been?
Around the world and back again, I guess.
Yeah, where'd you go?
Japan a couple times, and ever since until a few months ago, I've been busy with the broadcasting school and all that.
Right.
I can't help but be impressed. I mean, I used to just listen to your show. Now I get to watch it on my computer. This is out of the world, dude.
Yeah, isn't progress amazing? I mean,
it is.
You know, and you can watch this program now if you were back in Japan.
That is true, and I did listen to you when I was in Japan. One of the oddest experiences, I have to say, you know, coming back to America, it's just amazing how little I knew about what was going on
right. When
I was in Japan, because I didn't watch the news. That's just one of the things. You're out of the country, you just don't watch or listen to the news. And you come back, and it's like, wow, the defecation has hit the oscillation. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Now, what were you doing in Japan? Go ahead.
I was a youth ambassador.
Oh, that's right.
Which basically means that you get to go around and talk about your country and your state and learn on the converse of that, learn as much as you can about the country you're at. Part of it's teaching English, part of it is learning Japanese, part of it is teaching American history, part of it's learning about Japanese history. So it's really kind of a more even thing than, say, like a trip where it's like just a school trip and you're...
Well, did you pick up much of the Japanese language?
A bit, yes. I can hold my own. Just I don't want to talk about, you know, Shinichiro Abe and what a D-bag he is or was, you know. But it was fascinating following the Japanese political process and how different it is than the American political process. I mean, in Japan, somebody can be just absolutely blatant in their desire to remain in power, and you know, they're almost immune. And, you know, it is a more parliamentary political process.
Right.
But, you know, it's just fascinating. And when I came back to America, I just kind of had to reacclimate myself to the whole, you know, oh, okay, all right, so stuff still kind of sucks. even with a new president, stuff still kind of sucks. And then, I couldn't help but kind of chuckle a little bit when I just, you know, all this stuff starts happening and piling it up, and I'm thinking, you know what? The world's ending, and I'm okay with it. It's all good, you know? And I'm not even on drugs.
Weren't you in high school when you first called us?
I was in junior high school.
Junior high school, that's right. You were what, about 14?
14, 15, and now I'm 21.
Good Lord. All right, now, because I very seldom get to hear Japanese spoken, can you just say some Japanese for me? Just whatever you want to say in Japanese.
Sure. Okay. And I'll even keep it in constraints of the FCC.
Okay, thank you.
Rasha rimbo sabushi dana, and that basically means Rush Limbaugh is completely clueless.
Well, now, is Japanese, I don't know the proper term, but it is a language that uses tonal differences?
Not so much.
Chinese, no. I guess. Chinese is more that way. So, yes. A Japanese word, no matter what the tonal quality of the word, remains the same.
Yes.
Okay. Which is not the same way in Chinese, is that right?
That's true. Chinese, you could say something like, I want a dog, and, you know, if you say it wrong, you could be calling somebody something quite foul.
Right.
But another really nice thing about Japanese is the Japanese people really have no sense of sarcasm, and they are not afraid to ask you very stupid questions. And I've had quite a fun time being quite sarcastic to my Japanese peers and completely get away with it.
So sarcasm is just not part of their cultural vocabulary?
No.
Just not there?
No, not at all.
Huh. Yeah. What about irony?
Again, it's the Japanese, I want to say the Japanese psyche is a little bit different than ours, but, you know, a sense of irony, a sense of sarcasm, a sense of double meaning. I mean, they can have jokes and, you know, the kind of like parody on words, but they don't use it in common conversation like you and I would. You know, it is one of the weirdest things. It was one of the weirdest things I had to get used to. And I would like to apologize to your listeners if this is at all boring.
No, it's not. I'm about to hell with them. It's interesting to me. No, I'm just kidding. All right, Matthew, I'm glad you're back. And I hope you're going to call again. I hope you can make it through reentry. You're coming back to Jesus land. You're coming back to a real crisis situation, several of them. So hold on tight and don't forget to breathe, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks, Matthew. Take care. I'm turning up, 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 I'm turning up
know it. It's the end of the world as we know it.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Got an email from our education affairs correspondent, Kay Petrini from San Francisco. Mike, I just finished up Wednesday night's podcast, and I wanted to respond to one of the topics you raised that evening. You opened the program with the issue of Arizona's outlawing ethnic studies courses in public schools. You know, the hypocrisy of Americans who support this kind of measure is just galling. How much would you be willing to bet that people who backed this measure would jump at the chance to send their son or daughter to Europe for a semester abroad enrichment program? Now, what are such programs designed to do? That's right, to expose students to new languages and cultures. So, evidently, if it involves European culture, it's desirable. But if it involves Latino, Asian, or African-American culture, it must be outlawed! But they're not racist. No, siree. And how many of these same English-only types scream about signs printed in Spanish or Chinese while they pay an excess of $20,000 a year to send their kids to a French-American bilingual school? But to allow Spanish to be spoken in our own communities or to encourage that kind of bilingual education? Never. The garbage coming out of Arizona has made me even more grateful I live in a city and work in a school that demonstrates the strength of diversity. Just one example. Last week we had tryouts for the top honor of valedictorian. Students who rank in the top 5% of their classes are invited to deliver a speech to the faculty, who then vote on which student best captures the values and spirit of the school. We had four outstanding young women try out, and selecting just one was very difficult. After the proceedings, I went back to my classroom to finish it up a few things, and that's when it dawned on me. Every one of the students who had competed for the honor of valedictorian came from a different ethnic and linguistic background. The image of those four young women standing next to one another flashed through my mind, and it made me smile. It also made me realize that too often I take our diversity for granted. Unfortunately, the diversity that my school regards as a strength is sometimes viewed suspiciously by others. When we co-sponsored an event with a school located in one of the suburbs, those students actually expressed fear of our kids. What were they afraid of exactly? Well, it was definitely not because of our students' behavior, which was exemplary that day. And it wasn't because of the way our students are dressed, because all the kids were required to wear a uniform. So why be afraid? Well, you see, our students come from so many different backgrounds and cultures that we look like the United Nations. Instead of seeing the beauty in this, students from the suburban school, along with so many Americans, have learned to be afraid. The result? Laws like those passed in Arizona. I feel privileged to be able to see this diversity every single day in my city and in my school. Last week, I saw it culminate in a diverse group of four young women who have taken the reins of their education and reached the pinnacle of academic success. These young women, and the thousands of others like them, will go on to accomplish even greater things. And I have a feeling that when they do, laws like those recently passed in Arizona, along with proposals to solve the worst environmental crisis in history using a junk shot or top hat, will be mocked as examples of just how ignorant our generation really was. Kay. Well, the diversity thing, the anti-diversity thing in Arizona, of course, is limited. it's limited to non-white stuff because white cultural mores are to be taught. As a matter of fact, writing at Op-Ed News, this is where I found it anyway, Leonce Gator has a piece that I've got to share with you. I really do. It's entitled Arizona Ethnic Studies and White Christian Perfection. I'll start it and finish it after the... Nah, I better wait because I don't want to break it up. We have this bottom of the hour break, which is rather long. But the essay points out the fact that cultural studies or cultural history or ethnic history that is not to be taught in Arizona public schools does not include Caucasian ethnic history or cultural history. And there's a reason for it. And that's what the essayist, Leonce Gaiter, wrote about. That's what we'll talk about when we come back. All right? And what else we got? We're going to take your phone calls when we come back. I hope I can squeeze in a Prairie 2 missive, our economic affairs correspondent. And I wanted to talk about the Obama administration is backing the idea of a $23 billion stimulus to save teacher jobs. Do you realize up to 300,000 school teachers across the country are going to lose their jobs, and the kids are going to suffer that are being taught because of this, because of our priorities? It has nothing to do with the budget crunch. We always have money to fund wars and to fund the military-industrial complex. So the shortage of money to teach for teachers or for education is not a function of this economic crisis we're in. It's a function of the priorities of this country. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
I won't give up that easy, no. Too many tire tracks in the sands of time. Too many love affairs that stop on a dime. Well, oh, baby, I think it's time to make some change.
It's more Mike Malone.
It is 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. All right, I want to share this with you. Leonce Gaiter writes, as I sat in a pew in a Catholic church, I stared up at the enormous crucifix suspended from the ceiling on which a distinctly white man gazed theatrically toward the heavens. I looked around at the other black folks sitting around me in the pews and realized that even then, in the heyday of the civil rights movement, even as Martin Luther King used the language of Christianity to shame the majority into treating other men as men, I realized that for black Americans, Christianity was like the atom. Tearing it apart might heat your house, but that doesn't lessen its potential lethality. Arizona's outlawing of ethnic education revived this memory. Just as black Americans have historically ignored the more toxic aspects of the Christianity foisted upon us by our former slave masters, that toxicity continues to infect not only us, but the descendants, literal and figurative, of those who enslaved us. Mainstream Christianity rests on the belief in an historical Jesus. By any American standards, this living, breathing man would have been classified as white. Swarthy, yes, but white. Of course, Europeans recreated him in their own image, blonde and blue-eyed. But even when historical reality crept in and Jesus' skin took on a bit of a taint and his hair a bit more curl that was strictly Nordic, it was not that much of a stretch. White he remained. God chose a white man to bear his image on earth. Thus, white men are clearly closer to God, dearer to God, more in his image than any black-skinned being with nappy hair. Christianity has always borne this toxic underpinning of white supremacy due to its historical pretensions. Jesus is not an allegory who can be effectively transformed to suit the occasion. He is both the Son of the one true God and an historical fact, and he is white. Europeans used this aspect of Christianity to justify varying forms of brutality and enslavement. Americans used it in founding this nation, in drafting its constitution, and in its official governance for most of her history. That history of violence is not easy for some white Christians, most of whom would call themselves conservatives, to accept. The godliness of their image precludes the possibility of centuries of monstrous behavior. God has singled them out as most like him, and he has granted them dominion over the earth and its creatures. The idea that they lustily participated in butchery, rape, murder, and dehumanization, vicious enough to give most historical perversions a run for their money, well, that simply cannot stand. So they deny. They declare certain sections of the past off limits, even as they revel in others. It is fine to dwell on the past of the Confederacy, but off limits to dwell on the past of slavery and Jim Crow. The former, you see, is considered healthy respect for one's forebears. The latter, an incitement to resentment against white people. Clearly, shame and arrogance commingle here. It is the shame of those who know the facts, who know the facts paint them unkindly. It is the arrogance of those who believe themselves inherently superior in the eyes of their God, who believe that lesser men have no right to shame them, who believe somewhere deep down that they had the right to commit those heinous wrongs. If Arizona's white legislators want to erase ethnic-specific education, they should close every school in the state, for most of their curricula are white-specific. But, of course, the goal is to ensure that black and brown children continue to see the world only from the majority's point of view, continue to see the majority through the traditional American Christian prism, closer to God, good and pure, clean and right. Leonce, L-E-O-N-C-E, Leonce Gaiter, G-A-I-T-E-R. Yeah, that's the thing. We talk about that a lot on this program. The twin demons of capitalism and Christianity are just, I can't think of a more murderous pairing of such duration in the history of the human race. I really can't. Somebody called in the other night, wanted to engage me in some half-assed teabag conversation about what about all the deaths committed by godless communists. And, you know, my argument has never been that it should be a contest between who killed the most or who killed the least. I mean, Christianity is not supposed to be comparable to godless communism in terms of body count. Of course, it is to the right-wingers. It is to the Christian capitalists. It always has been. Well, it has been for the past 80 years since the revolution in Russia, since communism took over half the world, godless communism. You notice they always prefaced the word communism with godless. And the type of the type of socialism or communism that was practiced in these totalitarian states is as removed from the rhetoric of Marx and Engels as Christianity, as it's practiced in America, is removed from the teachings of Jesus. But you find me a Christian with whom you can engage about the predations and murder and rape and slaughter and genocide of Christianity, and I'll show you a Christian who is not really following the dogma of the evangelical church. To the evangelical church, those things never happened, or they only happened because, oh, you know, God was testing humans or something. It's just amazing to me. You know, Kathy and I were talking about this the other day when we were out on our walk. This constant drumbeat against marriage by folks who happen to be gay is just, I mean, it sticks in my throat. I'd like to just rip heads off about that one. It is so pissy. It is so ridiculous. And it's all based on a religious attitude, a religious attitude found in the Judeo-Christian traditions of the United States of America, not supposed to let the queers get married. On the other hand, those same traditions include the storytelling of Lot and his daughters. Lot, who was an ancestor of Jesus. I mean, you know, and the story is told, Lot's wife turned to a pillar of salt and Sodom destroyed. Ah! So what did his daughters do? The world has ended. We better go in and screw the old man so he can get pregnant. Oh, but see, that's okay. And Solomon and David. Oh, that's all right. Thousands of wives and concubines and hoes, no offense to sex workers, and all sorts of women clustered around these people. That's all right. But let a couple of people in 21st century America want to get married because they happen to be in love. No! Oh, well. I digress. Mike is in Burlington, Iowa. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
In about half an hour, it's going to be the 40th anniversary of the shootings at Jackson State University in Mississippi.
Yeah, we mentioned it the other night when the commemoration of Kent State occurred, and it was, 9 days?
10 days.
10 days later that the students at Jackson State were gunned down by state police, I think.
State and local police using, of all things, carbines and submachine guns.
Yeah, yeah.
Shotguns and service revolvers. And at Kent State, something like 60, 61 rounds were fired. At Jackson State, it was something over 460.
And that's because the students at Jackson State, of course, were dark-skinned.
Yeah, and they took out apparently every window on a 5-story dorm because they, according to police, there had been a sniper.
Yeah, right.
You know, one sniper, so we shoot out all the windows on the dorm and wound 5 women that happened to be inside the dorm doing nothing.
Aren't you glad we have progressed so far since that horrible day?
Not hardly. The world certainly hasn't. You look at what's going on now in Thailand.
Well, I'm being a smartass there.
Yeah.
We haven't progressed an inch. We just don't do it so blatantly. We don't. We haven't recently, anyway, gone onto campuses and shot students down, whether they're black or white.
Not recently, but then again,
could happen any time. Go ahead.
When there'll be a new General MacArthur to take out a bonus army sitting in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, you got to wonder about that. Mike, thanks. I appreciate the reminder. Take care. Before the hour, Michael in Roswell writes in, when Pat Buchanan went on television recently here to whine about Elena Kagan and that there weren't enough old white men on the Supreme Court, this was a blog comment about his little diatribe. Quote, did you know that one of Pat Buchanan's relatives was killed in the camps during the Holocaust? He fell out of one of the guard towers. Prairie 2 writes, Mike, this only applies in the winter. pilot's announcement approaching Phoenix Airport from Los Angeles. We are now approaching Phoenix. Please turn your watches ahead 1 hour and your calendars back 100 years. The morans there can't handle daylight savings time, so the whole state is on Mountain Standard Time year-round. I hear the Chamber of Commerce types in Phoenix are proposing renaming the state in a truth in advertising sort of way to Anglozona. And Ann happens to be driving through Phoenix, listening on XM. Hey, Ann.
Hi. Good evening, Mike. Happy weekend.
Thank you. Thank you.
Listen, there's been kind of an underground CB campaign by truck drivers to stay the hell out of Arizona, or if we have to go in here, which is where I am now, to not purchase anything in the state. And, Mike, I was over at a truck stop earlier. That's usually on a Friday night, packed. And I mean packed. There were 10 trucks there.
Really?
Seriously. All the people in the wash bay are all just sitting around. Nobody's doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's working, you know. I mean, take heart. They are really going to get beat up.
You know, I just don't understand what has happened in Arizona. I understand that they may feel that undocumented workers in their state is something that they don't want to handle without help from the federal government, and that's that certainly makes sense. There should be the federal government should the government is the one that controls our borders and or is charged by the Constitution to do that. And but do you remember when John McCain and Ted Kennedy came up with a plan to the end result of that plan to work through this problem was citizenship for people who would come to this country, would register, would pay their taxes, would do their job. After 2 or 3 years, they would then apply for citizenship. They would get their green card first, apply and do it right. All those doors have been slammed, and to declare Arizona in a situation that the governor has declared, A, B, to do this anti-ethnic studies thing, all this madness is coming out of Arizona. What the hell is going on there?
Well, my folks live here, and they're in their 90s.
Yeah.
And there's a whole, I mean, I would say a good 30% of the population in Phoenix, which is the biggest area, are elderly. And frankly, they're controlling the whole thing because they're the ones that get out and vote. And, you know, my folks have been Democrats their whole lives. And you know what? They're so xenophobic.
Yeah, I know. We just had a situation that developed here in Atlanta, a university in the Atlanta area, Kennesaw State University. A young woman there who's just about finished with her education. She's an undocumented immigrant from Mexico. She was stopped by campus police about 3 months ago and asked for a driver's license. Well, she didn't have one. She gave a false address. The sheriff of the county where this university is located then issued a felony warrant for her arrest. She turned herself in today in Atlanta. And what she got busted in Alabama, was put in a immigrant detention center, but they released her so she could come back to Atlanta, finish her education. To make a long story short, the sheriff of the county where this occurred, Gwinnett County, is insisting that the woman be deported now. She's like 21 years old, for God's sake.
Oh, my God.
And some of the more rabid white people, it's not just Phoenix, some of the more rabid white people here in the Atlanta area are saying things like, well, she took a slot at a university that should have gone to somebody who was legal or an American citizen, which is hog snot. I mean, you know, Kennesaw University, you know, they have an enrollment policy. If you pass the exam to get in or whatever and can afford it, you're going to go. So anyway, This woman is begging for mercy here to just be allowed to stay and finish her education. Right, and it's madness. We have a huge immigrant population, Latino or Hispanic, in the metro Atlanta area. Huge, and I will guarantee you that probably the vast majority of those folks are undocumented. But up to this point, Atlanta and Georgia, North Georgia, has been tolerant because these folks come here and they work their asses off. They do the kind of work that white people won't do. You know, you can see them putting roofing on in the middle of summer in Atlanta when on top of those roofs it must be 120 degrees. You can see them doing the scut work that white people just won't do. And this attitude of, you know, let's get rid of them, I don't know. They said the same thing about the Irish. They said the same thing about the Jews. They said the same thing about the Catholics. They said the same thing about all these different groups that came to the United States. But, you know, the path to citizenship back then was a little more rational and coherent. Oh, God, I don't know. Hey, thanks, Ann. Take care, okay? Thanks for calling. I'll see you Monday night, Truth Seekers. Have a good weekend, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, and have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.